reference of a case from Archer County. My name is Dabney Basil, and to my right is Justice Dana Womack, and to my left is Justice Brian Walker. Y'all go ahead and call the case for us, please, ma'am. Go ahead, sir.
May it please the court and counsel. My name is Anthony Bates. I'm here on behalf of Donald Wade Stevens, the appellant. The primary issue in this appeal was the trial court's misinterpretation of the statute that Mr. Stevens was charged with. It appears from the state's brief that they have conceded that issue, and so I intend to briefly address the interpretation issue and then move on to why we're arguing that the judgment should be rendered in favor of Mr. Stevens. So factually, Mr. Stevens was elected Archer County Constable, took office in January 1st of 2021. He had been a licensed peace officer for several years before that. That license had become inactive. Prior to taking office, he was working with TCOL on taking the necessary courses, completed over 350 hours of training and education in about a 9-month span. There were some issues with that because of COVID at the time. Same thing when it came time to take his reactivation exam. But he did take that finally in August of 2021. He failed that the first time. And under TCOL's guidelines, he had until December 22nd or three tries total to take that exam to get reactivated. He took it again in November and did pass on that attempt, that second attempt. Nevertheless, about a month later, the state of Texas charged him with having failed prior to that to maintain the proper license under Local Government Code 86.0021 and failing to provide evidence of such license to the Commissioner's Court within 270 days of taking office.
Counselor, real quick.
Yes, sir.
Just out of curiosity, I didn't pour real deeply into this one facet, but I am curious about it. Basically, you just said that under TCOL's guidelines, he was okay because he had two other times or three other times to take the test. If that's the case, then what was this admonishment letter about? Why were they saying that he was out of guidelines, if you will?
Is that the reprimand you're referring
yes.
to? Yes. So I don't really understand that, and it wasn't developed at trial, but essentially they didn't issue that reprimand until he was actually reactivated. So it's
defunct.
Yeah, but I mean, that for whatever reason, they issued that upon his reactivation, and I don't know if any time you let your license go active and then you reactivate it, it's because it had an inactive status for some period. That just really wasn't developed.
I mean, one thing that I was trying to get my head around was basically, is there are two arms over at TCOL. There's the one that's policing whether or not elected constables are in compliance with the elected constable rules, and then you have your TCOL certification folks over here who are monitoring whether or not somebody's getting reactivated and,
sure.
and going moving to that permanent status,
sure.
and that one might not necessarily have been talking to the other, but you really don't know.
I really don't.
Okay.
And I think that kind of goes to the ultimate issue of, you know, there's 86.0021, which is, you know, specifically for constables and reporting to the commissioner's court, and clearly that's a different standard from Occupations Code 1701.3545, which has to do with, and that's the statute under which TCOL has authority over all training for constables, and they are mandated to supervise that, you know, the license status and the training of all constables, and they're mandated to report any issues to the Attorney General if anybody is out of compliance,
right.
For the Attorney General to institute a quo warranto.
Is it your position that under 86.0021B he never had to activate his license?
Yes, Your Honor, that is my position. under 86.0021, at least as the way the statute is stated, is a constable simply has to have a permanent peace officer license. That was addressed at trial. Mr. Stevens did have a permanent peace officer license continuously from 2002 through the time of trial. And I don't know if perhaps that is that part of that statute is geared more toward someone who has never been a license holder. But regardless, the way that the language is, it only requires a permanent peace officer license. And clearly, if the legislature wanted to require an active license under that particular statute, and again, maintaining that you've got this other statute over here where TCOL is monitoring the constable's compliance, if there's any issues with that. But if the legislature wanted to include active license as a requirement for that particular subsection, it clearly knew that there was a difference between inactive and active, because in the immediately previous subsection, one of the qualifications to even run for constable is to hold an inactive or active license, and that's expressly stated in the statute. Additionally, the legislative history shows that when this other TCOL statute was created in 2005 under House Bill 1588, at that point, 86.0021 was also amended, and part of the potential amendment was to add the word active before permanent peace officer license, and that clearly did not end up in the final in the final version of the law.
I believe at trial there was the representative from TCOL that testified gave some testimony about how there was this idea early on that there was a difference between the reserve and the non-reserve, and that the reason that the statute had been crafted in the way that it had was because previously they were trying to differentiate between those two concepts, and then eventually that the differentiation went away, and there's really no difference between a reserve and a non-reserve TCOL peace officer. That's
exactly right, Your Honor. And that was our first question, is what is a permanent peace officer license? And according to TCOL, excuse me, like you said, there was permanent and reserve licenses. Reserve licenses, I think they said there's a handful of them in the state of Texas because they're just outdated at this point. There's just some a few older remaining officers that hold that kind of license, but basically those are being phased out. And so permanent license just simply means having a license which includes inactive or active license.
And obviously you're probably familiar that, you know, there's reserve officers who work for departments. It sounds to me like, from reading that, and this was news to me, that if you work as a reserve for a PD, for example, you maintain the same license under the new construct that everybody else does.
That's exactly right. And the new construct being something that's, 20 to 25 years old, I think, at this point. But, yes, that's correct.
On what basis did the state plead to remove Mr. Stevens? Was it simply because of the 860021 issue, or did they raise the issue in their petition that he hadn't delivered it to the proper person?
So both. So under 86.0021, you've got to maintain a permanent license, and you've got to provide evidence of that license to the commissioner's court within 270 days of taking office. And so I think that's kind of where we've landed at this point, is this: the state seems to acknowledge now that simply a permanent and not an active permanent license is what was required. Primarily what their response was about, there were some issues about an oral note from the judge on the record. In my reply, I cited several cases that make clear that I think the written findings control over any oral statements at trial. But more importantly, the state has always maintained that Mr. Stevens, when he provided information, documents, had conversations with the county judge, who is the presiding member of the commissioner's court, that was not sufficient to be providing evidence to the commissioner's court.
But did the state plead both those bases?
That's the question.
Yes, Your Honor, yes. And so as to that point, Number one, I think that I would argue that the law is vague as to what exactly is required from a constable in this instance. It simply says provide evidence to the commissioner's court. There's no specificity as to how to provide that evidence. There's no specificity as to what type of evidence is required.
Is there any case law on point? I assume you researched it. You tried to see if there was. And
I could not find any, very little case law on constable quo warrantos, period, but definitely not on these particular issues.
In the state's brief, clearly, they didn't really cite any. They made arguments about the just the idea of a commissioner's court and what that all entails and that there's multiple people involved, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yeah, and so I think this is all you know, mostly new. I guess from Mr. Stevens' perspective, we would argue, what else was he supposed to do? He can't, the law doesn't require it to be presented at a meeting. It just says provide it to the commissioner's court. So what avenues does he have to do that? Even if it was supposed to be presented at a meeting, clearly he can't just pop into a commissioner's court meeting and present that evidence. He's got to, and I think even the state's witnesses were clear that it's got to come through some other person to get to the court. They seem to try to argue at trial that there's a process whereby it goes to the county clerk, who then creates the packets and it goes to the commissioner's court. But even the county clerk testified that there's other ways that things get provided to the commissioner's court. And most importantly, Judge Jackson, the county judge, stated multiple times in multiple different ways himself that to provide something like this to the court, you can give it to me or you can give it to any other member of the commissioner's court. And so that's what he did. I don't think that there was any argument in the state's response that the documents weren't evidence. That was something that was argued at trial, but just for the sake of kind of covering that, you know, there were two T-Cole documents. One was, and this is in addition to the numerous conversations, whether you want to count those as evidence or not, that Mr. Stevens had with the county judge. But the T-Cole documents were an L1 appointment application and his personal status report, both of which contain his T-Cole ID number, you know, the PSR, the personal status report, expressly stated that he had an inactive license, which, again, maybe Judge Jackson didn't realize that meant that he had a permanent license, but, you know, clearly that's what we're arguing was the case. He specifically checked the box that he was a license holder. The state argued at trial or at least kind of had a back and forth with Mr. Stevens that, you know, there wasn't a certified document from T-Cole, but again, that's not specifically required by the statute. It's simply provide evidence. You know, Mr. Stevens wasn't getting any other direction, and so clearly he thought and he testified that he thought that, and he had been in conversations with T-Cole also about this issue, that providing these documents to the county judge was not only a way to provide this evidence to the commissioner's court, but that, frankly, it was the very best way to do that.
I noticed it didn't seem like there was a lot of reference to it, but I noticed that in the record there was some kind of certificate of graduation from some school at Sam Houston, and it appears that he was going through the process of doing everything he thought was necessary in order to satisfy his requirements.
That's correct, Your Honor. Like I said, he was keeping in touch with T-Cole about his license. He was actively working on it. He wasn't just kind of sitting back, waiting for things to happen. That example of that certificate is a good example of how other things were getting to the commissioner's court. For example, he provided that to the county treasurer along with his expense report for that trip. The county treasurer passed that on to the county clerk, and then it ended up being presented at a formal meeting of the commissioner's court.
Before this quo warranto.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. So if there are no further questions at this time, I'm about out of this time, and I will return for rebuttal.
Well, let me ask real quick. You know, so did you research specifically if giving something to a county judge on behalf of the county commissioner's court is sufficient?
I did, and I just couldn't find any case law on that either. It's more just kind of a common sense argument. And that's, you know, I included a little bit of case law in my brief about, you know, the commissioner's court is a unit. And so I think the argument that follows is that providing these documents to the presiding member of the commissioner's court is as good as providing it to the whole commissioner's court.
And this idea that they have a specific system in their particular county that's unwritten, that the clerk is kind of the clerk of that court, nothing in the case law says that if a county has developed some kind of internal, you know, operating procedure, that you have to follow that. There's no case law.
That is correct, Your Honor, and I would go even further to say that the testimony was pretty murky as to really, I mean, they did try to say that this is the process for getting things there, but again, there were lots of acknowledgments that it gets there other ways as well. So okay. I see my time's up.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is David Levy, and for the last 10 years, I've had the honor of being the county attorney for Archer County. I'm here to present the state's side of this particular case. The statute, 86.0021, is directed at constables. It places affirmative responsibilities on constables. Section A has to do with the licensing, whether and it does make a mention of active or inactive, and I'd like to get to that in just a moment because there are particular reasons why that would be of concern to Archer County. And then the other has to do with presentation of evidence to the commissioner's court, and it requires presentation of evidence of a permanent license, doesn't matter whether it's active or inactive for purposes of presentation, to the commissioner's court within 270 days of taking office. And we'll concede that Mr. Stevens had a permanent license. It went inactive in 2013. He had been a constable previously, so he knew the process. That license went inactive. He didn't bother doing anything by getting it active until after he had gotten elected. When he had a 270-day window in which the state allows persons who don't have their license situation fully straightened out to be deemed a peace officer for purposes of arrest, which is part of the reason we had a concern about it. Now, there's ample evidence.
Are you conceding that 86.0021, it doesn't, that the use of the word permanent license in subsection B, doesn't matter whether it's active or inactive?
For presentation purposes under 86.0021B, there is a distinction under 86.0021A. Okay. And there's a significance.
But the state moved to remove him under 86.0021B, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
We pled both issues.
So, but you are conceding now that he had what he needed to conform to 86.0021B.
Right.
With respect to a permanent license.
If he correctly presented it to the commissioner's court, I will.
No, I'm not worried about correctly presented at this point in time. The piece of paper, whatever you want to call it, that he had was adequate to satisfy 86.0021B.
Your Honor, the piece of paper that he had was a certificate of election, which he had asked Judge Jackson to sign, is certifying that he had been elected.
All right. I probably misstated it. The license that he held was adequate to satisfy 86.0021B.
Yes, Your Honor, had it been presented properly. Presented.
In that vein, I mean, you basically concede that in your appellant's, in your appellee's brief, correct? I mean,
Your
position.
Absolutely.
But at trial, that was your main theory of your case. You agree with that?
No, Your Honor. If I may, I argued about both points. The presentation point was the more clear-cut point. The issue about whether or not his license was active or inactive was significant to Archer County in that under TCO rules, if a license is inactive, that officer is unlicensed for all purposes. And from Archer County's perspective, having an unlicensed officer running around with a gun and a badge created certain liabilities for the county.
Right, but I mean, at the beginning of that trial, the judge began without opening statement. You asked him, can I do an opening statement? He apologized, said, okay, do your opening statement. And then your entire opening statement pertained to the first issue that you ultimately conceded. That is true, correct? I mean,
yes,
in fact,
sure.
I don't think in your opening statement you even mentioned anything about the presentment component to the argument.
Yes, sure, and I believe that's correct. Now, there was testimony at trial from Judge Jackson, from the county commissioner, from the county clerk and county human resources person, that Mr. Stevens never presented any evidence, this document or anything else, to the commissioner's court. Judge Jackson was presented the document to be signed. Judge Jackson did sign it. Mr. Stevens did not ask him to present it to the commissioner's court, didn't ask him to do anything about it, didn't even tell him what the purpose of it was. In a small county, the judge has a lot of responsibilities, and is right after elections, the judge is signing bonds to get people in office and is doing those administrative shop things. This probably did not have any more significance than certifying that he had been elected and getting a bond signed. The onus was on Mr. Stevens. Clearly, this section is directed to constables rather than county judges.
Yeah, and let me stop you right there.
Yes, sir.
You know, and you've got a good point. In these smaller counties, you say the county judge has a lot of responsibilities. In these smaller counties, you would agree that oftentimes the county judge is seen as the representative of the county commissioner's court. And ultimately, and a lot of times, when people are trying to get the commissioner's court to do something, that's their point of contact.
Yes, that's the point of contact, but it's that then has to go to the commissioner's court. The commissioner's court authorizes the judge to do certain actions, for example, certain contracts to be signed, things like that. That's an annual requirement for the commissioner's court to do. Now, Mr. Bates, in his reply brief, brings up the question of agency and mentions there really isn't a case law on that. If I might clarify that particular point, the case that was cited by Mr. Bates, the Rosales versus Brazoria County case, was a Tort Claims Act case. It did not make reference to commissioner's court. It talked about governmental units, including a county, without saying commissioner's court. And the test that was used by the Rosales court was whether an official had a duty to investigate, which put the county on notice of an automobile accident. Now, similarly, compare that on tort claims with Section 89.004 of the Texas Local Government Code, which states that claims against county or county officials must be presented to the commissioner's court. The legislature understands the difference in a commissioner's court and a county for these purposes. There's case law that I cited in my brief that talks about commissioner's courts act as a body, not as a single unit. And if we use the agency theory that Mr. Bates propounded, we're essentially writing that portion out of the statute. We're presuming that the legislature didn't intend it to state commissioner's court to be directed to them. And if we look at the testimony and we defer to the trial court as far as the facts, the fact is that Judge McGoy accepted that he did not present evidence to the commissioner's court.
Well, that's not in his findings. His findings is that he didn't present an active permanent license.
Well, Judge, if I may, as a matter of logic, if a permanent license includes both active and inactive, he didn't present any evidence of any license to the commissioner's court.
So you would construe finding number 6, defendant did not present evidence of an active permanent license to the Archer County Commissioner's Court before September 29th, 2021, to support your theory that it didn't matter what kind of license he has, it simply wasn't presented to the commissioner's court.
Well, Judge, between that and the testimony, there was no testimony elicited that he had presented evidence of an inactive license to the commissioner's court.
I want to ask a question.
Yes, sir.
And humor me for a second.
Absolutely,
you know,
sure.
It's hard for, I can't decide this in a vacuum. I will look at the law and I want to look at the facts of this particular case, but I think about my dealings prior to being on the court with municipal courts and county commissioners' courts. You know, I think it's fair to say that it's general knowledge that with any kind of municipal body, people will have agenda items that they want discussed amongst the entire court or even a city council. And they'll go to various city council members or various commissioners or various county judges and say, I want this dealt with. And then those people take it and they end up putting it on the agenda and it's presented in that way. If we follow, you know, forget about the component of the county judge not necessarily knowing what he was handed. I know that's your argument. But just looking at presentment in and of itself, just presenting something to an individual who is a part of that commissioner's court. If we follow your reasoning and your theory, then we would have to basically believe that anything that's presented to an individual member of a court is not sufficient. And do you see how that could be problematic?
Well, Your Honor, with respect, the statute itself specifies commissioner's court. The testimony said there's no testimony that he ever asked. Matter of fact, there's testimony he did not ask it to be placed on the agenda. He did not ask it to be brought to the commissioner's court.
Yeah, but it also doesn't say it has to be a part of the agenda. It doesn't even say that it has to be presented to the commissioner's court while it's in session. You concede that, right?
Your Honor, the best way I could answer that is that things are presented as a matter of record. That's why the commissioner's court record minutes exist.
But the code doesn't say that.
This section of the code does not say that. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Since you've represented the county a long time, isn't it true that a lot of the courts have construed substantial notice to a county to be sufficient when statutes require some particular sort of notice to a county judge or a commissioner's court? And do you think substantial compliance would apply here?
Your Honor, I'll be honest, I'm not sure how to answer your question. I apologize for that.
Let me ask you a similar question. Since the Civil Practice and Remedies Code says that the only person you can serve when you serve the county is the county judge, isn't there some argument that the county judge was the proper party to give notice to here?
Well, with respect, Your Honor, it would have said county judge rather than commissioner's court in the statute itself. The statute that requires notice to be given in terms of a suit, for example, under Civil Practice and Remedies Code, directs it, I believe, to be served on the county judge, and I believe the district attorney, if memory serves me correctly.
I think the Civil Practice and Remedies Code does. I think you might be confusing that with the local government code section that requires notice of the county. But didn't the Supreme Court allow substantial compliance there when they didn't expressly comply with the local government code provision?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question. I apologize.
What case is that? I want to write that down. That's a case.
It's Rocca Fort, RoccaForte versus Jefferson County, 341 Southwest 3rd, 919.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. In short, the reasons we were concerned about active or inactive license, I think, were self-evident. We didn't want to end up in a situation where we have liability exposure. That's part of my job as county attorney. That's the major reason I brought this in the first place. And it's not as though Mr. Stevens hadn't had ample warning or preparation ahead of time. I talked to him in April. I didn't want this to happen. I did not necessarily want to be here, although it's an honor for me to appear before you today. Archer County didn't need that. Today is election day. Mr. Stevens is on the ballot for the Republican Party. It's a one-party county. He'll be elected. He'll be taking office next week.
For what office?
This office here, Your Honor.
Okay.
But that doesn't necessarily render it moot. We have a period of liability exposure.
Is somebody serving in this? I mean, since we're talking about things that outside of the record, just I am curious. Who's serving in the capacity of constable in this position right now?
Your Honor, the Commissioner's Court elected not to fill it, but to allow it to be filled by the next election, to let the democratic process go forward.
But, you know, I mean, you mentioned that you had this conversation with him and he was put on notice. I mean, if that's true, you also have to concede that it looks like he was doing some things. I mean, he even attended a special class in Huntsville, Texas, in order to get into compliance.
Yes, Your Honor. Newly elected officials have a class they have to go to. And that's the one that he made sure he got to the Commissioner's Court. That part he made sure about. He never once even asked anyone, did it go to the Commissioner's Court? He had plenty of time to do that. He never once attended a Commissioner's Court meeting to find out until after the 270-day period had ended. And, Your Honor,
if we conclude the trial court's findings don't carry out your present theory of the case, should we render this or remand it?
Your Honor, I would suggest that if my theory is not upheld, which I trust that it will be, but if it isn't, then it should be remanded for evidence or a hearing as to whether or not he presented evidence of an inactive license to the Commissioner's Court. I think the answer is a matter of logic will again be no, and we'll be utilizing judicial resources for that. Because I believe if we drew Venn diagrams, we had both A and B contained in a circle. If the circle was never presented, neither A nor B was presented. Your Honor, I would ask at this time that the Court of Appeals look at the record, consider the possible effect of upholding Mr. Bates's agency theory to essentially allow any sort of notice to go to anyone for any statutory purpose. I don't know that this case warrants that big a change in the law. I think as a practical matter, it's essentially, we're only talking about a few months period of time here. And frankly, had Mr. Stevens done what he was supposed to have done in the 9 years, or 8 years, pardon me, that he had to prepare for this, we wouldn't be here today. I thank you for your time and for your courtesy. This has been one of the experiences of my life. Thank you very much.
Very briefly, if liability was a major concern for the county, I don't think they would have waited a month after he had reactivated his license to take action in this case for the first time. As far as the county judge being busy, the context of the record shows that there were ongoing communications between Mr. Stevens and Judge Jackson regarding this issue. So it wasn't like, you know, he just kind of slipped it under the door one night. I mean, they had, the undisputed testimony is that there had been multiple conversations about him reactivating his license, that, you know, he was letting Judge Jackson know that he was working with T-Coll on that, that COVID was an issue, but that he was completing the requirements that he needed to. He specifically called Judge Jackson the day of his reactivation exam that he passed to let him know that he had passed. And not only was the L1 document provided, but he also provided, his personal status report, which says Texas Commission on Law Enforcement, really big across the top, and it's a several-page document that lines out the, 350-plus hours just in a nine-month period that he started prior to ever taking office in order to get done what he needed to.
And just for clarity's sake, the L1, that is a T-Coll form. That is not a certificate of election.
That's correct. That is also a T-Coll form. as far as him not asking for anything to be presented at the meeting again, this was an ongoing discussion, and as Your Honor pointed out, you know, that's simply not a requirement of the statute. The big question is how to, and I believe Justice Womack, at which I'm also unfamiliar with the case that you cited, but how do you provide evidence to an entity? Again, he can't just pop into a meeting and do whatever he wants to do. Just like service on a corporation has to go to a registered agent or an officer of the company, you have to provide it to a person, and who better to provide it to for the commissioner's court than to the county judge being the presiding member of the commissioner's court. As to Your Honor's question about whether this should be rendered or remanded, we would ask that the court render judgment in favor of Mr. Stevens. When there are only questions of law and no disputed facts bearing on the ultimate resolution of the case, the review is entirely de novo. Again, there's no dispute as to these documents being provided to Judge Jackson. I think the only questions are, did that constitute providing evidence to the commissioner's court, which is a question of law. And again, the state has always maintained, as they're still maintaining today, that nothing was provided to the commissioner's court. And so all the evidence has really already been fleshed out at trial, and there's no reason for a remand under.
I really didn't make a finding about whether or not who he gave the documents to was sufficient.
That's correct, Your Honor. The trial court's finding was just specifically about an active permanent license, because clearly that's the interpretation that the trial court took of 86.0021. But when you review the record, I believe that the evidence is undisputed, again, that these documents were given to Judge Jackson. So the only question is, does that constitute providing evidence to the commissioner's court? And again, I would argue that that's a legal question for this court to review de novo and to render on. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Your argument has been very helpful to the court. And your case is submitted, and be careful getting back to North Texas. Thank you all.